relax. We'll keep the world covered for you.
99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm listening. You should be too.
Good morning, Lagos. This is Weba Boor on Power Solutions on Nigeria Info 99.3 FM. Good to be back. This morning we have another special guest in the name of Olu Verheyen. So Olu, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Weba.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming on. So let's just jump right in. Olu, as we've talked about, the purpose of the show is to talk about the solutions to Nigeria's power problem. Everybody knows the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working in a company that I think is doing a lot to kind of fund some of those innovations. But if you can start by telling us your journey of how you got into the off-grid space. I mean, you were in the oil and gas industry. Everybody in Nigeria wants to go to the oil and gas industry and stay there forever.
Yeah.
And you decided to leave and actually enter this space. Talk about that. Why did you do that?
Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, I've worked in the oil and gas space here for about 11 years. So the bulk of the work I did was around M&A advisory, gas to power transactions. And those are big transactions. They have long gestation periods, require quite a bit of stakeholder management across many organizations. And I think spending 11 years trying to get those things going, yes, they're large scale projects and could have potentially large impact, but they have really long gestation periods. And the problem is actually much more dire than that. You have, you know, an economy that needs to be powered and to grow at the rates that we needed to grow, given the burgeoning population. So I decided, you know, to take some time off. Thought I'd take a year off, and then 6 months into it, I met my partners and decided to go into this space. I spent a lot of time thinking about what to do in the decentralized space because I felt like those were much more manageable projects and could have immediate impact, even though not at the scale that we were trying to accomplish in the oil and gas space.
All right, so it was about creating impact for the urgent problem that we have in power.
Correct.
Okay, well, exactly. I'm glad that you're now on our side and part of this exciting new industry.
Yeah.
So you're with Persistent Capital.
Yes.
And you're the Nigeria partner.
Yes. I'm just the partner.
Okay, partner. Okay, but you're running the Nigeria and West Africa operation.
Correct.
So just tell me about this company, because I know it's I think it's based in Europe, but now they've been looking at off-grid energy in Africa and elsewhere.
Yes.
What's their background? Where did it start?
So Persistent was co-founded by two guys, Dirk Munch and Christopher Adun, in 2012. They've spent a lot of time in this space. Prior to that, they were both involved in E&Co, which was another impact investor in renewables in this space. So they started here, and we're one of the first round investors. They're highly regarded as pioneers in this sector. They're one of the first round investors in Phoenix, which has now been acquired by Engie. And OG, which is now Zola, and looking to expand into Nigeria. So we have about 11 investments across 13 sub-Saharan countries. In Nigeria alone, we're involved in Rensource. Ulu Energy has expanded here. And we also have an investment in a fintech company. I'll come back to why we've done that. The reason they've decided to do this, they see this the same way that we see that a lot of the on-grid and under-grid solutions will need very innovative solutions to solve that problem. You will also need to ride, I think the major trend that we're trying to ride is this rapid deployment of mobile technology. And so if you can deploy mobile-enabled pay-as-you-go business models to accelerate access to energy for bottom of the pyramid people who were very difficult to serve before and access, then that is a trend we want to ride. And that's essentially the history of Persistent in Africa. And we're looking to make more investments. The bulk of our investments if you look at the investments on our website, the bulk of that of those investments focus on household access to household energy. We're looking to apply that model now, same pay-as-you-go model, mobile-enabled pay-as-you-go model, to provide access to energy for business and productive use. In Nigeria, particularly, we're looking very actively for investments in that space.
Okay. So let's go into a little bit more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these companies that you've mentioned
are
not actually, I think in East Africa, they're very well known.
Yeah.
Olu Solar is very well known, obviously, in Senegal, some other Francophone countries.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not yet household names in Nigeria. And they're coming here, and
they're
they're here already. Yeah.
And, resources.
Yeah, and they're going to be a big part of the solution here. But maybe talk a little bit about what these companies are doing elsewhere in Africa, and why they started there first before coming to Nigeria.
Okay, so I think if you look at the first wave of the folks who were providing this decentralized access to energy models, what they were, again, like I said, they were riding this direct, the ability, this mobile infrastructure to deploy more energy, more products and services to underserved communities. So if you see what, why did it take off in East Africa first? I think it was mainly because of M-Pesa. Mm-hmm. There was a use case, mobile money, and you could just add more, you could deploy more things on that platform. That wasn't the case here. And, you know, but Persistent was one of the first companies to actually try and launch a different model in West Africa. So basically, it's a disaggregation of the value chain to some extent, and seeing that upstream of the value chain where you have a lot of design and manufacturing and production, realizing that that's going to be specialized and to some extent commoditized, and that the real work will be in distributing, financing, and providing after sales to these customers. And so they decided to pioneer that idea in West Africa. The first investment in West Africa. West Africa.
Oh, okay.
So they had they've been involved in okay. the first wave of the fully integrated in East Africa.
Yeah.
And then were the first, some of the first investors to move to West Africa with PEG, Africa in Ghana.
Okay.
And that's, you know, PEG is a well-known success story. So they just, they started that distribution and financing model only, not a fully integrated value value chain players that you've seen like the Lumoses and Phoenixes of the world. And focus on just a customer-centric model that has a lot of efficiencies in its capital, in its deployment of capital, and focuses on serving the customer and understanding the customer, and can tailor different products because it is, you know, it's product agnostic. You can source different products for the different markets in which you want to operate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Ulu in Senegal, for example.
And yes. Ulu, what in Senegal, what does that mean?
Ulu means trust in Wolof.
Okay, it's not named after
it's
you.
It's not named after me.
Okay.
It's a complete coincidence. And they have an extra O.
Okay.
So, so yeah, Ulu means trust in Senegal, which brings me back to this point about the customer-centric model. Like, you need to build a brand in this sector. I think the differentiator is your ability to build a brand that customers trust, because these are customers that are becoming new. They're coming into the consumer base. They're new customers into the consumer base, so they need to build. You need to build trust with them, and that's the only way you can deploy more and more services over this networks that you distribute. This distribution networks that you're building. So Ulu decided to has expanded across West Africa. So they originated in Dakar in Senegal, and now they are operating in Burkina Faso, in Mali, and have and started in Nigeria this year. That's the big part of what I've been working on this year, helping them launch in Nigeria. And we're serving, so I don't need to give you examples of places in Dakar or Senegal that may not be well known to our audiences, but some of the places where we're selling products right now in Nigeria are undergrid areas like Okitukukba in Ondo State, Ibarapa, Erewa. Yes, you will know that. Yeah, I see you rolling your face.
Even I don't know that.
Even you don't know that, exactly.
Yeah.
Ibarapa, it's a 2-3 hour drive from Ibadan.
Mm-hmm.
Dosekera, our MD here for Ulu Solar, has, you know, deployed systems there. We're selling everything from lights, just some lights and charging, to bigger systems with TV, looking to launch productive use. As I said, we're looking to of ways of evolving this same particular business model to more productive use. And energy and energy as a service, and energy services as well.
Okay.
Energy for business as well.
Okay, so I would actually like to hear about those places in Senegal.
Okay.
that they, because I know in Nigeria they're quite early, so mm-hmm. the impact stories may not be as much now.
As
but
much, yeah.
But if I remember the story in Senegal, some communities were completely
yes,
off grid, and now they're thriving economic centers. So
absolutely.
If you
so in Senegal, you know, so the thing that differentiates Ulu is its ability again. They constantly innovate around capital efficiency in their business model. So they're able, they're one of the few who are able to really serve this underserved communities that are off-grid in a capital efficient way. Because it's difficult to reach, to build the networks, and it's very expensive to do so. And so, I mean, what distinguishes Dan and Neil's teams, Dan and Neil, those are the co-founders, is their ability to do so in a very efficient way. And in Senegal, they have sold over 30,000. They're the leading provider of solar home systems in Senegal. They've sold over 30,000 systems. And in some of those communities, you're right, these are farming communities, difficult to serve, very cyclical incomes, but a lot of them have paid, they've paid over their 3-year plan. They've made it affordable with this mobile technology. You're able to remotely monitor their use. serve them, intervene, and provide really good quality after sales services to them. I went to one of those villages, you know, baobab trees everywhere. You know, one particular chief had bought two TV systems. It's not really a chief, but in Nigeria we call everybody chief. But he had two wives and they both had TV systems.
You got to make sure each wife has one.
Each one has to have one. You have to love them equally. So,
is that a special Olu package that, you know, one per wife?
Yeah, you know, who knows, you know. So yeah, he was, I mean, well enough to, he sold a cow, sold one of his cows and was able to do that and afford it over, because it is financed. He's able to pay, you know, twice a year over, he's a little bit more wealthier compared to some of the other customers we serve. So you go into these communities and you see them and they're happy with the products they have. These were people who just never thought they would have access to this type of services. And because they now have access to it and they realize that they can afford it because of the way that it is financed, it's in affordable bits for them, they're starting to ask for more products. So the last visit I had, we had a meeting with the village. He's sort of like the village rep for Olu. And one of the women, when we're starting to talk about what are the things they would need, and, you know, she insisted, you know, things that would help them grow their crops, improve their yield, because they know that this is transformative. This is their access to energy is transformative in many, many ways. It's more than just being able to switch on lights. It is your path to climbing up an economic ladder.
Right, and then so then Olu partners with them each step of the way.
Okay. So we figure out. So if once they're satisfied, they trust you. They ask for more products, more services, and what Olu does is spend a lot of time with R&D teams and companies who actually specialize in manufacturing these things. Olu doesn't do any of the manufacturing, to help them. They understand their customer and they help these manufacturers develop products that are tailored, to the local markets in which they operate.
And these communities in Senegal that you've seen before Olu, what were they using generators or they just had nothing at all? No power.
Candles, no power. So
nothing.
Yeah, these are not the villages I visited are not, they're not grid connected.
Right.
Yeah, this is not, they're not grid connected. There's no power. The candles or lanterns or other ways of, you know.
Okay. So unlike in Nigeria, a lot of these communities would at least have some generators, but in Senegal there was none.
Exactly. That's what differentiates us in Nigeria, that we are a little bit more advanced in our energy consumption levels. No matter how poor you go down the value chain, everybody has Abeta Pass. But yes, in Senegal there is no, it's expensive. Like, they're not an oil producing region. They can't access subsidized oil products to power their homes. And yes, it's not as affordable and accessible. So a lot of them are using, you know, much outdated forms of lighting their homes.
And so do you think that makes it easier or more difficult in Nigeria to distribute these kind of solar products, considering people have the small generator already, they're used to using them, they understand how they work, you know, as opposed to a community that has nothing at all? Which do you think is easier?
They have different challenges. I don't think serving this particular customer segment is easy in
anywhere,
any country, right? but they have different challenges. So in Senegal, I think what makes it slightly easier is that because they don't have access to generators, you don't walk into homes in off-grid communities that have freezers and all sorts of appliances that now need to be powered with the solar system. You can start them on a solar system, some lights and charging, and then start to increase their, as they start to move up the economic ladder, you continue to supply DC, more energy efficient products to them. But that also depends on their ability to afford it, right? There's a capacity to pay issue in some of the smaller economies. So it's a different type of challenge. In Nigeria, because we're so, our pallets have been, you know, we're used to consuming quite a bit of energy. A lot of the solar home systems, you sort of have to think about ways to allow them to plug their DC. You can't switch them from their DC AC appliances. Mm-hmm. You have the existing ones that we have. You have to find ways to bring in inverters and things like that allow them to continue to use this and this new energy source of product. So there are two issues that you have to deal with in Nigeria. You have to make solar energy competitive in terms of cost to serve the same, to provide the same service level, which is a challenge, and we're working through those, and there's a lot of innovation that will happen in that space, particularly hopefully around the batteries. And then the second bit of it is just making sure that you won't switch people off their appliances. This highly inefficient appliances, but they spent a lot of money acquiring them.
Right.
It's going to take a while.
Plus, they drive usage of the power, right?
And they drive usage of this power, yeah. Right. So it's difficult to switch those. Yeah, so that's a sort of challenge to work through here.
So now you've mentioned a number of the investments that Persistence has made.
Yes.
Very successful companies, Off-Grid Electric, Phoenix,
Olu,
PEG, Rinsource in Nigeria. What's the formula? How do you guys keep getting it right? How do you keep betting on the winners?
You gotta ask Chris and Dirk. I think the insight comes, honestly, I have to give a lot of credit to the co-founders. I think they've spent a lot of time in this space with their previous experience with E&Co. Mm-hmm. They know what doesn't work, and from that experience, from that failure, they learned quite a bit about what doesn't work. And I think they've done some very smart things in recent times, right? As they've looked to expand further in Africa, they've looked for the right partners to help them do that. If we say what's the secret to success, I think first making sure that these are companies that have exposure to markets that are going to grow. Mm-hmm. East Africa market, where there was a big market to target there. So that allows you can see a path to scale. Very quickly. I think companies that definitely leverage this mobile technology and mobile revolution and digital revolution are a must. I think in order to impact the lives of the people that we're talking about here, you must do so commercially. I know that a lot, we spend a lot of time talking about the impact of the work that we do, but it is important to have commercial rigor and commercial discipline in order to sustain that impact over the long term.
And that's something that they've driven in all these companies.
That is something that we pay close attention to.
Right.
Yeah.
So have they had any failures?
Well, of course. Okay. I mean, of course. Of course. Like I said, the story started out of a failure, right?
Okay.
Dirk, the co-founder, was gone into a previous impact investor in this space that eventually failed. And not that he was part of that process, but he learned a lot in helping that company wind down some of those failed investments. In our own investments, yes, we've made some bad calls as well.
Okay. And those are companies maybe we've just never heard of. Okay.
Yeah.
But so when Angie invested in Phoenix, did you guys exit? Did Persistence
exit?
Yes, we've exited.
Exited Angie and OGE as well, because OGE, we decided to use some of their products to pioneer this idea of just being a distributor and an after sales provider and financier in PEG. Mm-hmm. So we needed to exit because we needed to exit that investment.
And now you're going to use that money to invest in Nigeria, right?
You mean OGE?
Yeah.
Nigeria. No, we're raising our own. We're raising additional funds to deploy into our Nigeria investments. Yes, absolutely. But Nigeria is the main focus for us. And as I said, in the CNI space and productive use, energy for business, because I think there's a World Bank statistic, this Acha book that I'm reading, Acha and Mutsa's book, that that just shows that 77% of the jobs that are going to be created in this massively growing economies are going to come from SMEs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't grow those, you can't create those jobs if you don't have power for those businesses.
Right.
So that's going to be a key area of focus for us.
Yeah.
And
so in Nigeria, are you seeing the kind of companies that Persistence thinks are going to be winners that are homegrown? Have you, other than Rinsource? I mean, you don't have to tell us what your portfolio is or what your pipeline is, but are you getting excited?
It's a mixed bag, like in every economy. It's a very nascent sector, right? So there's still a lot of learning on all sides, from the investors and for the entrepreneurs themselves. But yes, there are a few opportunities that have me excited, that make me feel that this is going to be, that make me feel like this was the right call in walking away from my job at Shell.
Okay. Oh, okay.
In some ways, yeah.
Okay. So, and then you said you're fundraising now for Nigeria. So
we're fundraising, yes, at the Topco level, the Persistence level, and a big chunk of that investment will be deployed into Nigeria.
Okay. So I know impact investment funds like this, when they raise money for East Africa, it's often reasonably straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you say Nigeria, then there's a lot of red flags and people, I think, overstate the risk here. What are you guys seeing? Are the sort of international investors ready for this market, or are they still a little cautious?
So surprisingly, I think, at least surprisingly, I've seen that a lot of they feel that it's been de-risked when you have local participation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having knowledge, I think if you said you were investing in Nigeria from New York or from London and had zero local partnerships or zero local involvement or on the ground game, yes, you basically increase that anxiety level. Mm-hmm. But I think I think our model has been first to launch an office here, mm-hmm. help our business, one of our businesses expand here, so we get to understand what mm-hmm. the landscape a little bit better. And then, yes, we find that actually a lot of the investors, once they see the setup and understand that we have on the ground presence, they mm-hmm. are a little bit less worried mm-hmm. About our ability to execute, because they know we know the market. I've been here for 12 years. I know pretty much everything that needs to happen, and I'm pretty experienced here. And we're looking for teams also. We're looking to back teams who have a lot of experience operating and doing business in this environment. I think if you're trying to export or do a cookie cutter approach or import a new model into Nigeria with almost no experience, that would be a challenge, and that would be a source of concern. But it hasn't been the case for us because of our setup.
Right. Well, you just said you've been here for 12 years. That might make people think that because your last name is Verheyen, that you're not actually Nigerian, but
I am
you are
Nigerian. Oh, yeah, I'm Nigerian. My parents were a pharmacist, and they moved to the U.S., my dad in the 60s and my mom in the 70s, and decided to come back. So they come back in the 80s, early to mid 80s, and they decided not to take the big Lagos jobs, but moved me into the boondocks. So I actually grew up in a place called Ado-Ekiti, but not even in the center of Ado-Ekiti, but really off-grid Ado-Ekiti.
Okay.
So the idea of serving and using the talents that you've been given and the opportunities that you've been given to serve your communities, my parents did it. So mm-hmm. that's all I've known. And so for me, it is imperative to use all of the opportunities that I've been given to serve as well. Not just for my own personal advancement, but to serve. So I'm very well aware of what Nigeria is.
And that's why you know the kind of communities you need to take this
Absolutely.
To. You're going outside Lagos.
Absolutely.
Into the deep.
I know. Yeah. I grew up in those places, so I know exactly where we need to go.
That's good. So now one of the things you talked about, though, is the importance of mobile money to drive these businesses. And in Nigeria, we're obviously not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing? I mean, what are you doing in light of that differently in Nigeria? I guess just what you can share. And obviously some of it is proprietary.
Mm-hmm. I think what's important is the ability to, not necessarily mobile money, because M-Pesa is frankly the only example of success that we have in Africa. And there must be
so in Senegal, there isn't really...
They do have mobile money. Mm-hmm. They partnered with Wari there, but Frank, these guys built their own technology to, because you can leverage the infrastructure, the mobile infrastructure to deploy more technology to your customers and collect payments. You don't necessarily need to have mobile money, but there are other ways for you to do it.
Right.
And for Ulu, they actually built out their own agent network to collect a lot of this cash, and then built their own apps to do that. But you can deploy a lot of solutions on your mobile app. I think in Nigeria, some of the communities that we have ways of Nigeria. Most in every village that I go to, there's always some guy who has a bank account, and he's the banker for everybody.
Right.
So if you make that person, if you activate that person as an agent, you can collect your funds because he just goes around his neighbors and figures out a way to make sure that the payments are paid and make sure that this is a trustworthy person as well as. So there are different solutions. I don't think mm-hmm. the fact that there is a lack of mobile money, and that was needed for success in East Africa, is also means that it's needed for West Africa or Nigeria, for example. There'll be other solutions that we need to create here that will work.
All right. So when the East African players are saying, oh, we can't come to Nigeria because...
It's just laziness.
It's just laziness. Okay.
I'm just joking.
She said it here.
I'm just joking. No, I think it's comfort, right? Mm-hmm. It's what they know. That's what they've built these businesses mm-hmm. on. And so if that key ingredient is missing here, of course it should be a source of anxiety and worry for them. But I think they need to start paying attention. That's why locally made solutions. You need to figure out what works in this particular market. It's not a cookie cutter approach in any market. This is Africa.
Yeah,
you have to figure out you spend your time doing your homework here, what works in this market, and figure out a solution and design local solutions.
Right. And even in Nigeria, I imagine different parts of Nigeria actually
different solutions
have
will
different
work.
Solutions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Zainab, should we go to the phones? Can you give the numbers? I don't know the numbers. I haven't been here long enough.
Call us on 01-277-0993, 01-277-1993, 01-277-1993, and 01-277-3993. This is Nigeria Info. We are listening.
Okay, so while we're waiting for calls, if they come, let's move on. So, you know, you started up in this space, and you brought Olu here and all that. So what, do you feel the ecosystem here is ready? Has the government put in place the right regulation? You know, how is it looking?
You know, I have to give a lot of credit to REA. I think they've been, you know, sort of exactly what you would expect for, a government party to be an enabler, right? Mm-hmm. So they've done quite a bit in this space to enable opportunities and investors, and they partner with every company I know. And we have direct emails to the DG, and she can send her an email about any issue, and she really genuinely tries to help you resolve it. Now, obviously, there's still many other things that need to be fixed. But I think this bit of it is encouraging. And maybe that's just the fact that there are younger folks who are just as passionate about solving this problem in their lifetime. I think for the Rural Electrification Agency, which is the bulk of the types of companies, the agency of focus for the types of companies that we've backed, it's been a strong partnership. I think Rensource, for example, would not be the success that it was in Sabongari without REA.
Okay. And what about beyond REA? Just general, the business environment.
The business environment is challenging. It is not, for me, I try not to focus on the challenges. I try and figure out where the opportunities are.
Okay.
I try and figure out where the opportunities are in those challenges and that's what motivates me. So if you try and focus on the challenges here, you will be highly demotivated.
Right.
There are many.
Right.
So what in every challenge, I try and figure out what the potential solution is and what the potential way forward is and the opportunity to be captured in that challenge.
All right.
Call us on 01-277-0993, 01-277-1993, 01-277-2993, and 01-277-3993. This is Nigeria Info. We are listening.
All right. So can we do one more question? All right. One more question for you.
Okay.
As we're looking forward to the future,
yes,
you know, Nigerians, anyone who's grown up here, all of us have felt for decades the reality of the power problem. Right?
Yes,
is there hope on the horizon? What are we going to see in 3 years?
In 3 years, you'll see a significant uptick in the power mix from renewables. I think with a lot of funding going into mini grids, a lot of focus on CNI.
Mm-hmm. What's CNI?
Commercial and industrial power. So using renewables to balance and provide more access to renewable power.
Oh. You'll finish that after we have a phone call.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. Can you tell us your name, please?
Hello.
Okay. All right. Keep telling us about the vision.
Yes. So I think in 3 years, you will see a significant uptick in mm-hmm. reliability and access provided to many communities that are under grid. It's not that the government hasn't built the grid. They're just underserved. So whether they're small businesses, they'll have more options to access affordable, reliable energy. And a big part of that will be due to renewables that you can deploy using this mobile technology that I've said, pay-as-you-go mobile technology that I've said. That would apply to the commercial space, to SMEs, as I was talking about, to farming communities, farming co-ops. That will continue to be the case.
All right. Zainab is telling us we have to stop.
She's
the boss.
Thank you, Zainab.
So, Olu, thank you so much for the wonderful insights.
No problem.
Maybe you can come back again in a couple of months and tell us some more Nigeria success stories.
Exactly.
In the meantime, we look forward to coming back next week. Next week, I'll have the CEO of Lumos on the show. I think we're done.
We're done.
So over and out.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
We connect.
connect you to the world. We connect you to the vicinity. We are Nigeria Info.
Listen to me. I said this is a real situation and the government has to do something about it.
What are you trying to insinuate? All these people looting Nigeria's money?
This is Nigeria Info. In the heart of Nigeria. 99.3.